Mr. Winston, reel 12.
If you thought the war was going to go on forever and that you were going to be in prison for at least 10 years and things like that, did that mean it was tempting to try to escape?
Oh, I could have escaped. There's no difficulty was put in my way of walking out whenever I wanted, from prison itself with all the gates. I could have escaped. Not only could I have escaped, but those intervals of court-martial, I think I told you, one of them was actually a student of mine, and he said, why not go a little further and I'll look the other way. But I couldn't. I said, what will happen to you? He said, oh, I'll go through the usual thing, of course. But he said, I did thoroughly enjoy seeing you get out of it. Oh, I could have escaped. I mean, what would it mean if I escaped? I would have had Claire and my children and my life, I know, but it would have been a very selfish kind of thing. I should be free because they gave me just that kind of privilege in the place that I could have opened the prison doors. I didn't have the keys, but they would have opened them gladly for me. No, I wouldn't escape, no. I worked it out. Once I did escape, I told you about that, when I was let out about a third time. And Claire came up carrying a baby, you know, Theodora. And Claire said, must you go into this old place? I've got a room. Oh, I said, we'll walk on then. And you see, we had three soldiers with bayonets. And we had to pass the... we were going, of course, to the guard room. I said we had to pass the guard room, thinking of Claire's home. Well, Claire and I walked on, and we turned round, and they were walking without me to the guard room. I mean, they allowed it, you see. They weren't idiots, those soldiers. They allowed it. They thought we're not going to take this chap along, you know, to with us. So I had a whole week, and even then I wrote to the prison authorities that I'll have a week or a fortnight, I forget what time, and then I'll come back and report. I didn't give an address though, but I was near. I mean, they knew where I was. I don't think for a moment they didn't know. Book had a marvelous response. I can't tell you. I received letters from Rabindranath Tagore, from Havelock Ellis, most beautiful letters. Bernard Shaw, Zangwill, Quilla Couch, all of them. It had an extraordinary effect on.
Yes. Oh, that's wonderful.
And this Wilfred Gibson, and they became friends. It isn't only just letters. Became intimate friends. I came across a letter from GBS. Didn't read the book early. He read it 1947. That's what it is. 30 years afterwards. And he wrote me a passionate letter after it. I almost felt that he'd fallen in love with me, you know. Oh, I've got it here. It's extraordinary. I really respected it. It was a real... I don't know why they... I've got it here. And the reviews were amazing. The John Masefield just came across his letter.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, all of them, isn't it?
Yes, that's what I mean.
Look at that.
I shouldn't think so.
Yeah.
Why had Shaw happened to come across your book then?
Oh, well, we were intimate friends by then. And,
yes, well, that's obvious from the letter.
And he suddenly, I came in one night to him and I said, have a look at this. You may see things in it which you will interest you. And he looked at it, so he said, you were a conchy bastard, were you? He read it, and then he read them for about a few months, or he kept the book for a few months, he might not have read them at all, but then wrote that. That was when he was 91.
Yes, he would have been.
Oh, he tried. I was trying to remember. He made up little poems. I just found it here before. He's always competing with me, making up rhymes. Something like this. Let us sing in praise of conches who sit on their haunches developing paunches while nearby on the Somme Dick, Harry and Tom are facing gun and bomb. I remember it, you see. He didn't mean it.
No, that wasn't his attitude. That wasn't actually his attitude.
No, his common sense of the war was written a few yards from here. He wrote it in Frinton as the quietest place in the world, just on the Esplanade. He lived just across here. And he wrote there. And that book brought more people to Wormwood and Wandsworth. I said to him once, you did a nasty thing getting people into prison like that. Why didn't you go? Oh, he said, I wouldn't have written it if I thought a single person took me seriously. He said, I would never have written a book like that. Not a book, a pamphlet, you know. Yeah.
I was thinking, before you went to prison or even thought of the war and so on, you must have read a lot about prison and about war in the great literature. And you would have read about prison experiences, Wilde, perhaps Dostoevsky.
Yeah.
Was anything that you read anything like what prison was really like?
Oh, no, they're not like that. Well, I feel like a brother to Wilde. I have complete affection for Wilde, but it isn't that. His description is marvelous. He's got nearest to the actual experience than anybody I know. But when I showed GBS, who knew Wilde very intimately, this one, I do not paint, but on my wall are painted pictures which enthrall. I asked him what he thought of it. So he said, He said, "You're a confounded liar, aren't you, about a thinking figure, sorrow set." He said, "If Wilde, I know for a fact, cheered up the whole gang, he wasn't ever a thinking figure, a silhouette or a thinking figure, sorrow set." Well, I told him he's just kidding himself, because it was just what he was. Because my warder at Bedford was the one who was the last warder Wilde had at Reading. And when the warder saw me poking about with these verses, he became very intimate with me. I think I told you, when a bomb fell in the neighbourhood, I sent him round.
She is really.
Oh.
Thank you. A bomb at prison?
I was just reminding Claire, when the warder came round to your place at Bedford, because I was worried as to whether the bomb...
Oh, they were very nice.
Yes. Well, he had known Wilde, and Wilde, I've got...
It was the Oscar Wilde then.
Yeah, I've got the biographer of Joyce, James Joyce, the novelist.
Yes.
Was writing about Wilde, and he asked me if I can help him with any information, so I... told him about this warder. Here it is. "You asked me in your letter to let you have a further particulars about the prison warder who was responsible for Oscar Wilde at Reading Jail. I knew him very well. He was in his way a cultured man, fond of music and reading, and I should think the only prison servant who respected Oscar Wilde as a poet and dramatist. His attitude towards prisoners was to treat them as men, and he enjoyed talking to them and giving them a sense of worth and individuality. Such warders did exist even in those times. I suspect he was drawn to this kind of work by a religious call, because he played the organ during service and guided the prisoners in the choice of library books and discussed their reading with them. Whenever he had a chance, he was particularly interested in burnt-out cases, and he considered O.W. as one of them. He couldn't get him to talk and found him extremely uncooperative. I remember Crawley, for that was his name, telling me that he regarded Oscar Wilde as a challenge, and he tackled him by never referring to his crime, but always about his achievement as a writer, and made a point of quoting his verse and his aphorisms whenever he could. Crawley felt that Wilde was mentally stunned and had completely forgotten his literary achievement. The great man was left behind, and only the criminal remained. That's what Crawley said to me. He thought that in a way this was a very good thing, because it brought him into spiritual contact with his fellow prisoners. I'll never forget, when I was in charge of exercise, I saw the prisoner behind Oscar Wilde saying something to him as they walked round the ring. The look of gratitude and delight on Oscar Wilde's face."